Welcome to another episode of Live from the Blue Seats. I'm your host, Rob, joined this week by Dave and producer JL. Jean-Luc Shapiro is here. We may get a surprise pop-in from somebody. JL, I want you to be on the lookout for that. It is someone who has not been on the show for quite a long time, but this person, I'm not going to say he or she, might want to pop in. So maybe that happens, maybe it doesn't. This was originally maybe going to be a live show, but we couldn't really get that all together. YouTube wasn't allowing us to stream. We didn't really have a better place to do it. We don't really trust Elon Musk's platform anymore to do these sorts of things as Twitter Spaces. But we obviously have a lot to talk about. Recording here on a Friday night, we're going to release the pod over the weekend, and you know, hopefully everybody gets around to listening to it, whether it's on the weekend or you know, early next week. But Dave, JL, how are you guys doing? How are you feeling after what was a wild 72 hours in the NHL?
I am exhausted.
Yeah, it sounds about right. That's the same for me.
I mean, and this is actually two phases of exhaustion. One, I'm on like 7 hours of sleep over the last two nights, but that's my own damn fault. But two, covering the trade deadline, what is this, my 15th or the 16th one with the site? I think my math is off on this, I guess, but it's somewhere around there. And it is, this was the toughest one to cover because the Rangers were not only tied to everybody, but there were expectations they were going to make a big splash. There were expectations that the Rangers are going to fill holes in the roster that were not there to start the season. They have to keep up their pace to keep first and in the Metro. And this is really one of two, maybe if they're lucky, three more years with this core that they really have to make a run and get another shot at a cup. And all that stress is shown in social media, and perhaps is the growth of social media too, that my mentions were an absolute fucking train wreck. Oh my God. And I can't even imagine what the beat writers or that poor Rangers admin on Twitter had to deal with. It's just, everything was a complaint after complaint after complaint. It's like, chill, smoke some weed, go outside. It was a beautiful day. Go outside, touch some grass, smoke some grass.
Gorgeous.
Something
beautiful,
just holy crap. I'm glad it's over. I think the Rangers are much better now than they were 12 hours ago. But Jesus.
Yeah, we're going to do our own grades. Thank you, everybody, by the way, for sending in your own grades. That was kind of the prompt from Twitter. You know, how would you grade this deadline? Give us your kind of quick takes, and we're going to read them all. We're going to react to them. A couple of questions as well. And one of the things that maybe we'll get to towards the end of the show is just, but I'll mention it briefly here, is Dave, on top of all that, which I totally agree with, this is kind of an unusually high stress environment around a trade deadline. The rest of the league went completely bonkers. I mean, I think this was, and look, I think we are all highly critical of the NHL at times. It's not the most well-marketed league. The way the cap works doesn't always allow for a lot of creativity and player movement. These are things we've talked about here on this show, on the blog, on Twitter for years. This was an awesome deadline. There was just a lot of action, a lot of movement, huge names moved, right? Obviously, not just Jake Guentzel, but also Tomas Hertl, very late, like with 10 minutes on the clock. We find out about that trade to Vegas as they continue to break all the rules and not get punished for it.
I hope they get eliminated in the first round. I hope they get swept in the first round. Oh my God, I hate that team now.
Yeah, I think we all do. That's something that we can, like I said, I don't want to go too much into the wider NHL stuff right now because I want to focus on the Rangers. But before we do that, before we get to our grades, JL, how are you doing? What's your kind of initial thought to kick off the show?
how can I put this without getting too deep into it? Yeah, this one is incredibly exhausting, like Dave said. And I wasn't even writing anything, at least relative to the deadline. It's just the back and forth and people just either being really negative or, you know, people just making these absurd trades. But overall, I think they are a better team, realistically speaking. You know, it's just I'll touch more on it when we begin to really get into it. But I'm just kind of glad it's over, because now I don't have to worry about, you know, what they're doing. You know, I know what they've done now, so I don't have to have that looming over my head anymore. So that's always nice.
This was, I agree, an agonizing 2 weeks. Let's call it 2 weeks, because that's really, you know, the activity kind of started a couple of weeks ago. And I think to your point, Dave and JL, like, we've known what the Rangers have needed to do really since like the 11th game of the year when Filipino went out, and we're like, all right, this is probably a concussion. We knew it was his fourth concussion. You know, people started to say the words Michael Sauer, which, again, I'm not trying to invoke any bad vibes here, but it's like, all right, well, they're probably going to need a center. And then there was all this, you know, pretty good evidence that Blake Wheeler, not really cutting it in that middle six or even top six role that they signed him up for. Maybe going to have to make a move there. You know, Nick Bonino falls off a cliff. His game just goes in the tank. They asked him, you know, just was asked to do too much with Hedl going out.
Probably so related to the Hedl injury, by the way, that Bonino issue.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I think Bonino would have worked fine if he was a full-time fourth line center. I really do. But he was just asked to play too many minutes and do too many things. So look, it's been an exhausting few weeks. I think the main emotion I feel is relief, right? It's over. Particularly the Guentzel stuff is where I was kind of hitting my limit. I was like on my phone until 1 a.m. that night. Like, is this going to happen tonight? And like, I think it was Elliot Friedman on Tuesday tweeted like, oh, they're trying to get Guentzel done by Wednesday so that they can do other business on Thursday and Friday. And of course that trade doesn't get done until late Thursday. So, you know, Elliot was either wrong, which is not uncommon, or Kyle Dubas or whoever the source inside the Pittsburgh Penguins was, whoever that was, lied about their timeline. So look, I mean, all in all, it was fun. A lot of big names moved. And I agree with you, the Rangers got better. So let's get into our grades. Dave, you mentioned it at the top of the show. You've been doing this a very long time. So I'll start with you. Let's hear a letter grade. And actually, why don't we tell people what the trades are first, right? Let's do that so that we get that out of the way and be very clear about what the Rangers acquired and what they gave up. So we've got, and I'll go most recently back to the Wenberg trade. So late today, Jack Roslovic from Columbus to the Rangers for a conditional fourth round pick. That's in the 2026 draft. That only becomes the condition on that is it becomes a third rounder if the Rangers make the Stanley Cup final. They acquired Chad Ruedel, so there's your depth defenseman, which we all thought they would do, from the Penguins for a fourth round pick in 2027. So that's three drafts from now. Wild to think about. And going back to the Wenberg trade, that was really who they gave up the most to get. Second round pick and a conditional fourth that becomes a third. The second rounder is from this year's draft, the 24 draft, the fourth or the third from the 2025 NHL draft. So
I just want to point out that pick going to Seattle was actually the pick the Rangers got from Dallas for Nils Lundqvist. And that's going to stay a fourth round pick, because Lundqvist is not, he has to get 55 cumulative points over his first two seasons with Dallas. And I think he needs 20 points in his next 19 games to do it. And that's not going to happen.
No, and he actually doesn't play every game. I don't think, I think he's kind of like,
no, he doesn't.
Yeah. So, and they did make an AHL trade. They got Nick Patan, who's actually a very good offensive player. He becomes their leading scorer. He leads, he would be the leading scorer on Hartford and now is, for Turner Elson, who was more of a depth forward that wasn't really playing on the, for the Wolfpack and wasn't really contributing offensively. The Wolfpack get a little bit more scoring punch, and Nick Patan is another Johnny Brodzinski type, another quadruple A player, if you will. So, four trades, three major ones that where the Rangers bring in three new pieces that will play right away. So Dave, like I said, I wanted to start with you. How do you grade it?
So I may come off as a huge homer here, but you know what? I don't care. I'm giving them an A for
Wow.
Many reasons. First off, I did my very best to ignore basically everybody complaining about Gensel, Tarasenko, what were the other, Buchnevich, who was never actually available, Zuccarello, who was never actually available. What were the other names that the wingers that it was like, oh my God, the Rangers didn't get this guy. The Rangers didn't get that guy.
Alex Tuck's the one that comes to Alex Tuck. Yeah.
Alex Tuck, who was never not actually available. So of the guys available, and we're actually seeing now that in all fairness, Gensel was never really available to the Rangers because Vince Mercogliano legitimately just put something out there where, and I'm reading from Phil Kotcher's Twitter here, perhaps more details will trickle out in the coming days and weeks, but as far as I can tell, the only way the Rangers were going to convince the Penguins, Kyle Dubas, to trade Gensel to New York instead of Carolina was to include either top prospect Gabe Perreault or two of three of Will Cooley, Kaapo Kakko, and Brennan Hoffman. Jake Gensel was never happening. And the first round pick, mind you. Good call. Jake Gensel was never happening. It was never happening. And the trade that you don't make is sometimes far better than the trade that you make. In this case, trading for Gensel would have been far worse than not trading for Gensel. So that's a win for Drury. You can't have it both ways where you don't want the Rangers to sell the farm, but then you get upset that they don't sell the farm for Jake Gensel. Pick a fucking lane. Anyway, I digress. The Rangers didn't give up anything of value except for maybe a second round pick. And they addressed their center hole, which Wennberg is essentially a Swedish Hedl in the style that they play. Pass first, good on the forecheck, good in all three zones, perhaps underappreciated. Wennberg's numbers looked like crap this year because Seattle's not very good. You gave up absolutely nothing for Chad Ruedel, who would be a top six defenseman on any other team, but because the Rangers have a solid top six anyway, he's just the seventh defenseman. And as we're seeing, he's already going to get into the lineup with the Trouba injury. Then you got a fourth rounder for Jack Roslovic, or if I pronounce that right, who is this year's Frank Vetrano. Everybody wanted Frank Vetrano was the other name, by the way.
Yes.
Everybody wanted the Rangers to trade Vetrano, who again wasn't actually available. Like, what was it, Henrik and Vetrano for a first and Kakko? Again, pick a lane. Either sell the Rangers to sell the farm, or don't want the Rangers to sell the farm. Pick one. That would have been a terrible trade. We all would have ripped that apart. And it wouldn't have moved the needle enough. But you look at a guy like Roslovic, he has had solid play-driving numbers. He produces offense in a middle six capacity. He didn't cost much. He is unheralded. He is the 2022 Frank Vetrano. The only difference is when the Rangers got Vetrano, we knew somebody like Andrew Kopp was also coming, so we didn't think about it. Whereas, oh my God, it's Drew Blank. Roslovic, is the guy that we knew the Rangers needed, or the position the Rangers needed. It's just your perception of the trade. The Rangers addressed every hole they had, and they did it without giving up anything, and they did it without going for that big splash that didn't work last year. The Rangers built a super team last year, and then we saw how that happened. You know, it's not the big names. It's the right names. Are these the right names? I think so.
Yeah, it's funny, too, because right before we started recording, we were kind of joking about how often 1994 gets invoked. And
oh, Jesus.
Basically, the trade that you outlined, the Gensel trade that wasn't made, that would have been the equivalent of 1994, right? So people who are sort of looking for these parallels 30 years later, where not a lot of parallels really exist, other than the fact that it's 30 years later and that the Canucks are good too. If they made that Gensel trade,
I swear to God, if that's the Cup final, I'm going to lose my shit.
Oh, well, I'll be thrilled because I think the Rangers could beat them in a 7-game series. So I'm fine with that. I would be a little bit more worried about Vegas or Colorado. If it's Vancouver, I'll take my chances. But the Gensel trade is almost exactly like giving up a Monty for Matteau and Brian Noonan. You know, I think there was one other player from the Rangers that went the other. I think it was a minor leaguer or a draft pick that went the other way.
It was Black Ace. I'm drawing a blank on the name.
Yeah, well, it was. You're right. It was one of the Black Aces. But and
look, they got Callie Anderson or Phil Bork?
Peter Anderson. Yeah. I think it was Peter Anderson. Regardless, that would have been the type of move where you just look back and you're like, man, you know, did we really get rid of, you know, either Gabe Perreault, right, who we all think is, you know, has at least high end middle six, if not top line playmaking, like maybe point per game type player potential, or that combination of, again, Kako and Hoffman, Kako and Cooley. I'm so surprised that Will Cooley's names kept making it into these rumors. I mean, there was just nothing ever out there that would have made me believe that he would ever have been available in any trade, just because he's kind of cemented himself as like a solid third liner on this team. He's exactly what they need. He plays a style that they otherwise don't really have. He's just a perfect fit for this team right now. Doesn't make any sense that they would trade him. So, I find that very fascinating how, like I said, people are kind of invoking 94, but also saying like, well, you know, that team went all in and they sold the farm, and yes, it worked. But there is also a lot of regret, I think, around that. And, I think it's fair to say that it probably cost that version of the Rangers more shots, more legitimate shots at Stanley Cups. So Dave gives it an A. That's a high grade. I'll be honest. That's not what I was expecting, Dave. Really? JL,
what did you expect out of me? Hold on. What did you expect out of me?
I think you would have gone B. I think you would have just been like solid B.
Nah. All right. Interesting.
But you justified it. You justified it.
All right. Fair enough.
Well, and we'll get, and let's hear JL's, and then you'll hear mine in a couple minutes, and then, you know, we can argue about it.
I always just want to argue with JL anyway.
Yeah, of course, because that's always his MO, is he always wants to try and fight me like the old man he is, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah,
Dave. That sounds about Sorry, right, Dave. Actually. I guess what I could call it is I want to say, I was tinkering with two different letter grades, possibly a B minus, C plus. I'm going to go B minus because, honestly, you know, you talk about the trade that didn't have to be made, and you look at everything in hindsight with, you know, with Gensel and how basically Carolina essentially just, you know, it just wasn't the right trade. And you're right, Dave, that they didn't need to, you know, they weren't going to make the trade with us. It was a pipe dream. It was nice to kind of be in the thick of it, because, you know, there was a distinct possibility that Gensel could be one of ours, but you can just tell that the momentum wasn't going the Rangers' way. It was actually more likely to go to Vancouver than actually with the Rangers, in my opinion, but it's nice to dream. But overall, you know, Wennberg, Roslovic and Ruedel, I think we're all pretty solid ads. You know, a lot of people are pretty underwhelmed with Roslovic, but a lot of people tend to forget that Roslovic was a first round pick and was included in the Pierre-Luc Dubois trade, or he was involved. If I'm correct on
all
that.
All right. Good call.
So he's not some plug. The guy, yeah, he hasn't really filled out the, you know, quote unquote projection that he was expected to be, but the guy's still a very talented hockey player. And you guys mentioned it too, you know, it's essentially this year's Vetrano and Kopp. So, you know, half of Rangers Twitter didn't even know who Frank Vetrano was before the playoffs that year, or even before the deadline that year. Heck, half of them probably didn't even know who Andrew Kopp was. I mean, I did, because, you know, I knew that Andrew Kopp played with Carl Hagelin in college, or they were on the same team, if I'm correct. So I knew that, so I was very happy about that. But overall, though, just with the way that they were able to kind of, you know, add depth to the team, I liked it. I'll give it a B minus because they essentially did what they set out to do. They just didn't get the flashy name. And I know people are upset, you know, they wanted the big plot, the big splash. But at what point are we going to keep trying to take a big chunk of the piece of the big chunk of the cake, but then continuously fail because we either hurt ourselves down the road or get somebody that doesn't exactly fit the style of play this team is so, you know, used to playing. So, and as far as Ruedel goes, you know, he's not the greatest defenseman, but he's serviceable enough, and you're looking for a guy that can pull playoff minutes. So I like it. I was very impressed. You know, it just so happens that when the trade went down, I was driving to go get pizza, and everything always happens when I'm driving to get pizza. So I think I have to go get pizza more often. So,
yeah, you know what? That trade actually went down when I was on my way to Chipotle. So we're both in the same boat there.
So yeah, JL, I think one of the things you bring up that rings true with me is like the stylistic fit here. And I think this is where, again, and we'll get into more of the details about, you know, what this version of the Rangers now looks like and what we're expecting to see over the final 20 games of the year and into the playoffs. But Peter Laviolette has a discernible style. And I think we know that Wennberg is a shutdown type player. You know, I think that's maybe the one difference from Hedel, Dave, where like Wennberg has more of a reputation as a shutdown guy. I do understand, I think, what you were saying, though, just stylistically about like he's good. He can skate the puck out of his own end, and he is defensively responsible. He's a playmaker. So, you know, I think he had 40 some odd assists one year in that he had one season where he had 59 points. And I think that was like he had over 40 assists that season. You know, I think the other thing that stands out to me in general is, especially with the forward core, look, you know, let's not, you know, sugarcoat it. The Ranger forward core in particular is not that young. Now, obviously there's youth with Kako and Lafreniere and now Cooley, but most of the rest of the forward core is over 30. And all of a sudden they've added two guys who were truly prime age players, right? Wennberg is 29. Roslovic is 26. They're both very good skaters. Roslovic has like top end speed. He's like a, you know, maybe elite is a strong word, but he's a very, very good skater. And he has some skill to his game. So, I'll just, my letter grade, I think, is very similar to yours, JL. I think if I was having a bad day, I'd say C+, but I think it's actually a B-. And I'm glad I'm not having a bad day, because why would you want to have a bad day anyway? But I think it's a B-, and I mean that in a positive way, right? The reason that it feels that way is because of, I think, the build up to the deadline and, you know, just the fact that they didn't get, you know, again, even another name that we didn't mention, Dave, not that this one was realistic, because I don't think the Devils would ever help the Rangers, but Tyler Toffoli gets traded to Winnipeg for a relatively reasonable return. I mean, he would have fit like a glove. He's like the perfect, he would have been the perfect right winger for Kreider and Zibanejad. And that would have been a legitimate top line, legitimate top six with a, you know, proven goal scorer, a guy who scored, you know, 30 goals twice and 20 goals, I think, 7 or 8 times. Like, he's a legit top end scorer who's won a Stanley Cup. So if he were on any other team,
real quick, mm-hmm. just about Toffoli, he's lost a lot of his foot speed lately, which is mm-hmm. one of the big reasons why he didn't work out in Jersey. So you're right, but you just have to be mindful that he wouldn't have had the same speed as he did back in the day.
Yes. No. And this team needs speed. I mean, I think that's kind of what my point was with Wennberg and Roslovic fitting the need and fitting the style. I said B-. I think we may look back on this more fondly, and look, I don't think either of these I shouldn't say that, but you know, they're both unrestricted free agents, right? Neither guy has term. I'm not even talking about Ruedel yet. I'll get to him in a second, but it just hit me, guys. And I'm thinking about a player that the Rangers traded for about a decade ago, who also came from the Columbus Blue Jackets, who was also a first round pick, who was also about a 40 to 45 point player before he came here. And then he became one of the most beloved and crucial Rangers in those 2013 to 2016 seasons. And he guessed.
I thought you were going for Rick Nash initially, but now I know who you're going for.
Yeah. Who am I talking about?
Survey Derek says Brassard. Richard McLaren Nash.
No, Derek Brassard.
No.
Oh, Derek Brassard. Why am I thinking Rick Nash? I'm sorry. Yeah,
no.
Yeah, you're right.
Nash, because Nash and Rob kind of look alike.
That's true. I've had I had somebody come up to me in the blue seats once and tell me that. Like, literally, like, you look exactly like Rick Nash. And I was like,
You do.
Yeah, I know. I do. It's a pretty good.
I'm assuming he's a little better at hockey, though.
Yeah, I'm working on it, but you know. When you throw your back out at Trader Joe's, your future, that really happened to me this week.
Sorry.
Threw my back out at Trader Joe's on Monday.
So what were you reaching for something? Were you bending over to grab something? I think we need the play by play on this.
I was, and you know what? It was, I don't normally do this, but, you know, I watch my son during the day because I'm currently between jobs, and it was actually a kind of a nice day on Monday. And I said, you know what? I never do this, but we need a few things from Trader Joe's. I'm going to bring him with me. Right. So normally I would just go and get a cart and whatever. So he was in the stroller and I was putting all of the grocery items in the bottom part of the stroller, right? Like the undercarriage storage of the stroller. And I grabbed a couple of packages of, there are these like yogurt smoothie things that my daughter loves. And I bent over to put that in the stroller and I didn't feel anything bending over. But when I stood up, it was like a stinger in the lower left portion of my back, like just shooting pain immediately. I yelped audibly. So like the people around me in Trader Joe's probably heard me. And then I had to,
sorry,
I was,
oh man.
And then I had to ask the lovely lady who was working the checkout counter to bend down and pick up all the items out of the stroller for me. And the other lady, who luckily it wasn't a busy time, she was helping to bag all the items. She brought everything to my car and helped load the car up. So that was not fun. I missed a men's league hockey game on Wednesday night and I'm not dealing well with old age as it continues to set in, guys. So
I'm laughing because I know this feeling, and JL, you'll get there. This is 40.
Get there. It's already happened to me.
It happens to 80% of people once you hit 30. Yeah. It's like, it's kind of like a 4 out of 5 people this happens to. And I'm not in terrible shape. I'm not in great shape, but like I'm on the Peloton 3 times a week. I play hockey. And yeah, this was a very unfortunate turn of events on Monday.
I'm laughing because I know the pain. For me, it's usually getting out of the shower that I screw something up.
Yeah, people say like sneezing or reaching for stuff, like reaching for your phone in the morning. People will do it. Getting out of the shower. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that was a nice little sidebar into my, you know, misfortune this week. I pulled up Derek Brassard's numbers though, and it is really fascinating. So, and Roslovic is almost a perfect parallel, right? So Roslovic has played 8 seasons in the NHL, 426 games. He has 213 points, right? So he's exactly a half a point per game player, you know, a 41 point guy over the course of 82 games. In his 4 years with Columbus, he's a little bit better than that. He's got 146 points in 246 games, right? That's in 4 seasons with the Blue Jackets. Looking at Brassard, who played 6 years with the Blue Jackets, 309 games, he had 169 points, right? So a little bit better than a half a point per game, but was certainly a guy who, you know, everybody looked at as like a high ceiling first round pick, like, oh, is he going to put it all together? And, you know, basically like this is a change of scenery move for him going from Columbus to New York. And of course he comes to the Rangers and he was very, very good. 174 points in 254 games as a Ranger. That was his best scoring rate anywhere he went. He was obviously beyond clutch in the playoffs in both runs, obviously 13-14 all the way to the final. And in the following season, he had that hat trick against Tampa in Game 6 to keep them alive. A lot of heroic, you know, performances to the point where Larry Brooks anointed him Big Game Brass. And I think that that's a nickname that everybody agrees with. So, look, I mean, am I sitting here predicting that Jack Roslovic will be the next Derek Brassard? No. But am I saying that this is the same type of move with the same type of upside? Yes. That's why I think I feel, and the more I think about this move, I feel better and better about it. You know, and then you look at, you know, sort of the online analytics community, right? The Jay Freshes, the Corey Schneiders, they all love this move. They think this is one of the best value moves of the deadline that any team made. And they think that Roslovic could really, you know, take it to another level with the Rangers. So, you know, look, I think, again, I'm trying to be realistic here also in the sense that, and I said this earlier in the week in our group chat, you know, right now, if you look at the betting markets, the Rangers are somewhere in the neighborhood of like plus 1,000, plus 1,100, right? So basically like 11 to 1 shots to win the Stanley Cup. does any of these acquisitions, or do these acquisitions in total really make those odds a lot shorter, right? Are they all of a sudden a 7-1 or an 8-1 shot to win the cup? No. So if you, and look, I think betting markets are informative because there's a lot of data there. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of dumb money, but there's also a lot of very smart money that kind of moves those things around. You know, had they gotten Guentzel, maybe those odds would have improved to like 9-1. So in that sense, these weren't huge needle mover type of trades, but I think they are a much more complete hockey team. And I'll also use a cliche here. I think these moves make them a lot harder to play against. Wennberg is going to be a really solid shutdown player, a pain in the ass to play against. Roslovic is a crafty, speedy player who should, you know, if given some time to mesh with Kreider and Zibanejad, should open things up for them and maybe get them some easy tap-in goals 5-on-5. You know, now we can get back to that setup, Dave, that we've talked about, where Mika can be more of a finisher as opposed to a playmaker. So there's a lot to like here. And then, you know, just quickly on Ruedel, look, everything that I've read and looked at and heard is that this guy is a really good defenseman, you know, on the defensive side of the puck. Yeah, he's not going to score a bunch of points. The Rangers get plenty of scoring from their blue line already. So that's not a concern. The concern is, can he step in on any pair on a given night and play? And I think he can. So, I mean, frankly, Dave, I think you'd agree with me right now. He is an upgrade on Ryan Lindgren and maybe even on Trouba. And that's saying something. Now he may not step right in if they're fully healthy, but Lindgren's having an awful year to the point where, again, we were joking about this, but you know, putting Ruedel in the lineup over Lindgren right now probably makes them a better team. So, I think that's a savvy acquisition as well.
And I just want to point out regarding Lindgren, I am still absolutely convinced that he's hurt. And what Ruedel does is he allows the Rangers, once Trouba's healthy, because that kind of blindsided a lot of people. Once Trouba's back, Ruedel can stay in the lineup and maybe the Rangers can just let Lindgren just chill for a bit. Let the cyborg parts kind of mesh with the rest of his body so that he's ready for the playoffs. Because the Rangers are, they'd have to lose every single game to not make the playoffs at this point.
Yeah.
And we know that's not going to happen. So they're essentially in, they're a lock. Maybe after Trouba gets back, you let Lindgren sit for a week and then you play him maybe instead of 20 minutes a night, 15 minutes a night, just ease him back in, let him keep his legs under him while also hopefully getting healthy. And you need this for the playoffs. You need Lindgren to be Lindgren in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So Ruedel's acquisition allows the Rangers the flexibility to not maybe rely on Zach Jones and to have a more steady defensive presence while they're just looking to tread water, basically.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that because, you know, like you said, Lindgren's been taking a beating as of late. And, you know, I think I had mentioned something to someone earlier that Lindgren's pretty much probably going to get hurt in the playoffs at some point. And yes. And I don't want to say that to, you know, be morbid, but it just always happens. So it's nice that they have a guy like Ruedel, who I've talked to Penguins fans, you know, who are out there, and they basically just say that, you know, he's just kind of there. So, but his defensive numbers are perfect. You know, they're not perfect, but they're perfect enough for this team. So he makes for a suitable replacement. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits into the lineup when he comes back in. And, you know, what they'll do with him, you know, in the case of when Chica Trouba returns from the lineup. But Lindgren definitely needs a break. The guy's just, yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, I think this also brings to mind my last point about this deadline. And then I think we'll get to everybody's comments and questions. You know, even though he's not one of the big names, I consider Lindgren part of the core of the team, right? I mean, he's been Fox's partner since they've both been here. And like you said, JL, like he needs to play better. He just has to be himself if the Rangers are going to be, or Dave, I think you said that, sorry, I don't want to attribute that, but if the Rangers are going to go somewhere, they're going to need Lindgren to be his usual self. And I think that goes for the rest of the core of the team. And that really, to me, is kind of the overall thesis for me of this deadline, is it is officially put up or shut up time for this core of players. And again, by core, yeah, Lindgren's kind of an ancillary member, but I'm really referring to Panarin, Fox, Kreider, Zibanejad, Trouba, Igor. I think will be Igor. He's been playing lights out lately. And you know, I think we all feel pretty good that that'll continue into the playoffs. Look, there have rightfully been questions over the last 18 months or so about this core. Is this a championship core? Is this the group of players that you can that you can go forward with and try to win a championship or multiple championships with? And I think that question gets answered this year. I think just, you know, there is no, you know, 2 years ago, it was kind of like, oh, this is out of the blue. And they made this great kind of underdog type of run, you know, even though they had home ice advantage in two of the three rounds they played in. Last year, I think everything got papered over by the, you know, the big splashes they made at the deadline. And people were kind of looking at the Kane thing as a little bit of a scapegoat. Well, it's like, oh, Patrick Kane came in and he didn't really fit and he was injured. Gallant couldn't really make all the pieces fit. He was fired, right? At this point, there's no excuses. There's no excuses for Zibanejad. There's no excuses for Kreider, who I don't want to speak ill of Kreider, who's been excellent in the playoffs the last 2 years. He led them in scoring last year. He obviously scored plenty in the 22 season as well. But we know Panarin hasn't been great. I mean, you could throw Vinny Trocheck in there as well. You know, you could throw Lafreniere in there, who didn't score in the last play. Like, these guys have to step up and play. Like, they just have to be the guys, you know, like, and it seems silly, right? But like, no one's going to go into this playoff season and think like, oh man, Jack Roslovic's really the guy that's going to either make or break this whole thing. It's like, no, this
exactly.
is
exactly.
It's time for exactly. Mika Zibanejad to step up and be an $8.5 million center. And yeah. if he is that, then great. And we'll know that. And it'll almost not matter who they acquired at this deadline. So in a lot of ways, this paints a perfectly clear picture of what the Rangers are today and what they will be in June and July this year. And that's either a true contender, because look, even if they don't win the cup, if they make it to the conference final or the final and they play their asses off and they just lose a close series, I think we could all stomach that and feel good about the core. If they get bounced early, I think we see massive changes.
So I want to say that everything you said is absolutely perfect. The Rangers have the star power. They already do. They have, I think it's Byron Bader, and if I mispronounce his name, who does that whole number of stars or whatever. What the Rangers have in terms of stars, Panarin, based off his criteria, Panarin, Zibanejad, Fox, Trocheck technically, Kreider technically, that's five. That's enough stars to win. Then you got star seasons and all that shit that he goes through. The Rangers didn't need stars. They needed the right complementary guys to fill the holes and balance the lineup that put Vizi and Brodzinski in the fourth line or out of the lineup, in, if that happens to Brodzinski. That's what they needed. They did. It would have been nice to get Gensel, sure. But is that another Kane? Because remember, Gensel's hurt. You know, it would have been nice to get Tomas Hertl, who, the fuck Vegas. But they didn't need it. And they just did the right guys to put a guy like Zibanejad, who is having a horrible season to me, at least. And they need to put him in the right spot. Does Roslovic do it? Possibly. If not, then you move Kako up. You make that a kind of dual scoring shutdown line. You shelter the third line with Roslovic, Wenberg, and Cooley and make that another scoring line. You have options. But you need. They don't do anything if Panarin doesn't show up. They don't do anything if Zibanejad doesn't show up. They don't do anything if Kreider doesn't show up. They lose in the first round if Igor shits the bed. Like, these guys are the ones that need to step up. Everybody else just needs to ride along.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, look, even like I mentioned, you know, Trouba's part of this core. He makes a lot of money. He's not a star player. We know that, at least by that criteria. Yeah. But I think what we know about Trouba is that Trouba's good can be very good. Trouba's bad can really tank a whole game. When he's off, he can be on the ice for three goals against. That's just how it is. And it's very much feast or famine with him. And when they made that run in 21-22, I mean, I remember coming on this podcast and talking to people like, it almost felt like going into every game that run, like if you get good Trouba, you have a good chance of winning. If you get bad Trouba, you're probably going to lose like 4-1. So, you know, it's these kinds of guys. Look, it's your high paid players. It's the guys that, you know, previously JD and Gorton and now Chris Drury have built the team around, right? That's why they're called a core, because everything else is built around them. Jack Roslovic, Alexander Wenberg, Chad Ruedel, right? Obviously down the lineup, the guys that have been here, Will Cooley, Jimmy Vesey, all of those guys are complementary pieces that just need to do their job. So, and like I said, I think we'll find out an awful lot about the future of this core after this playoff race. All right. So JL, if you want to, let's go through everybody's comments, because we got a lot of input. You know, we asked our, you know, our listeners on Twitter to sort of, you know, give us their letter grades. And so we'll read through those. We'll react to those couple of questions to get to as well.
Okay. All right. So first we're going to go with our buddy, Mr. Tyler McGillick at Tyler Richard 93. And he writes, when it was just Ruedel and Wenberg C-, adding Roslovic though to solidify the bottom six B. Keeping all of our prospects was a plus as well. Bottom of the lineup is perfect. Time for the stars in the top six to earn their keep. Exactly what you guys just said.
I got no notes for you, Tyler.
Nope, that's pretty straightforward, so to speak. All right.
The only note I have is maybe Roslovic is top six, not bottom six. But that's because I just want to poke fun at Tyler.
Well, no, I happen to agree with that. You know, just thinking about Roslovic's skill set in general, you know, it just fits more of a top six. The guy's crazy skilled with stupid speed. So, I mean, so I would definitely agree with you on that assessment. So the next one would be from, this is from Hope at Mika Zibanejads. Okay, make sure I got that right. She writes, B, I was a fan of lower risk, high reward move like Roslovic. Only gave up one pick in this year's draft. Didn't give up any prospect. Kept Hartford in a great position to also end the year strong heading into the playoffs. Everyone loves a big name, but they did very well. Again, I concur. that's about as right on the nose as it should be. And she is absolutely right on that. And you know, to just to mention the Hartford aspect, that's a really good point, because, you know, there is a team below us and they're actually doing really well this year. And they have a lot of good complementary pieces that can be used in the NHL, like a Matt Rempe and an Adam Edstrom. So it's good that they're actually trying to build up that depth down in Hartford, because one, the Wolfpack are actually good, and two, that actually makes the Rangers better as well. So that's pretty good.
I want to expand on that too, because we spoke about this a lot in the offseason, and something that Suit was bringing up was the Rangers needed to figure out what they wanted in Hartford. Was it going to be a competitive team? Was it going to be a prospect factory? Or was it going to be basically nothing? And for 15 years, it was nothing. They weren't producing prospects. They weren't a good team. They were just there. And Drury has done a very good job of turning that team around, where they're not only competing, but they're also providing depth for the Rangers. When was the last time the Rangers had multiple in-season call-ups that actually looked good?
It's a great point. And also, by the way, I want to shout out Hope at Mika Zibanejads, who follows Hartford really closely, covers Hartford kind of, you know, informally on Twitter, but knows the team really well, knows the prospects really well. So she's certainly someone to give a follow to if, you know, if you're interested in learning more about Hartford. It's also great to shout out just again what they didn't give up, right? As we record this, Brett Berard has scored his first career professional hat trick tonight for the Wolfpack on Friday. He has 22 goals now. I believe he's up to 40 points on the season in 53 games, which is a really good scoring rate for a young player in what is widely considered the second best league in the world.
I also think that most of that is at 5-on-5. Yes. I think the overwhelming majority is 5-on-5, actually.
Right. So, you know, and look, Offen's having a good year, but I think it's been said that I think 8 of his 12 goals are on the power play, whereas Berard is a much more, you know, the 5-on-5 stuff is statistically more repeatable and predictive of future success. So not that I'm diminishing Offen. I think he's also going to be a very good NHLer, but like you said, Dave, there are very good players in that system, not only complementary pieces, but, you know, maybe one of Berard or Offen is a top six guy eventually. You know, maybe obviously we don't know what Gabe Perreault is going to pan out to be, but he's currently leading college hockey in scoring as a freshman. So there are assets in this system, along with all the first round picks now for the next three drafts, that were not surrendered at this trade deadline. So that I think is a huge win. And I think it is, you know, look, when you're chasing a cup, when it's been 30 years since the last championship, yes, it's, you know, prospect hugging and asset, hoarding is not really what you want to hear when the team is supposed to be competing, because you want to win championships, but you can do that without completely sacrificing your future. And that's certainly what the Rangers are trying to do right now.
And just to add to that point, there's a difference, like you said, there's a difference between prospect hugging and the difference between completely obliterating your future for a cup. That would have had to have been the case with Guentzel in order to blow, you know, Carolina out of, or Pittsburgh out of the water, excuse me. And it just doesn't seem effective. I was willing to give up a first. I'm willing to give up a first and at least maybe Cock or Othman if it needed it, but I wasn't going to give up Perreault, you know, you one or the other, you know, just not too much in for those for that superstar. So it's good that they're actually taking an emphasis on actually trying to keep a lot of their young guys on the team. So here's the next one. This next question comes from Paul Taylor's version, of course. It's pretty cool. At P Colette 88, he goes solid B+, knocked it out of the park on a depth D, very solid 3C at market value, and great value on potential Vetrana value, right wing one, right wing three, pending Kako. Didn't lose any of our first or any prospects. Power play two could be an actual weapon now with Rossiflik, Wenberg, Kako, Lafreniere, and Gus two. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point, Paul.
Yes, absolutely. No,
power
I mean,
play two is always an afterthought, by the way. You ever realize that? Because power play one gets what, a minute and 50 seconds out of every power play?
I'd say a minute.
We never
30.
Think about power play two, and that's a really good point.
They should try and find a way to get that unit a little more time. Just again, especially in the playoffs, again, you go through weird stretches. You have to be able to ride hot and cold streaks over the course of a 7-game series. It'd be nice to throw a different look at your opponent as well in a series. So, there is value there. I mean, you know, Wenberg also kills penalties. I know his penalty killing metrics are bad, or they're bad this year, but you know, he does have experience doing that. And, you know, maybe with a more structured unit around him, he can be a little bit more effective. So no, look, there's value across the board with all three of these players. So, and again, I think it's about trusting the core guys as well.
And worth noting that his metrics are bad with a bad team. And we've seen how players have turned it around with just proper structure, maybe the right system, the right coach. The metrics are great as tools, and I know we stress this all the time, but it's not a be-all, end-all.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Next question comes from JE_Costanza at Coco_Costanza. And they write, I give them a B. They addressed holes left by injury, so they have a lineup of pros and depth behind them. But they needed a goal-scoring wing and didn't get it, which may prove deadly should Panarin line be shut down in the playoffs. They can go as far as Igor can take them now.
Yeah. So I think that's a fair point. And that is the other side of the coin. You know, I know, Nick, who is on this podcast frequently, I think he falls more into the pessimistic camp, and I don't want to speak for him, and maybe we'll have him on next week to kind of say his piece, but I think there is some disappointment about they did just kind of need goal scoring. Right. And you know, Frank Vetrano probably is the guy that, you know, once Guentzel doesn't happen, you probably, if you really are going to double down on like, we need a goal scorer, period, end of story, we will go and overpay for Frank Vetrano. Then that's what they could have done, right? That could have been another course of action here for the Rangers. I do think that's a fair critique. None of these got players that were brought in are goal scorers. You know, Roslovic is a natural center, or was drafted as a center. I think he's shifted to wing more recently in his career now with Columbus. He's been playing both sides, but obviously will most likely play right wing with the Rangers. He's not a pure goal scorer. His career high is 22 goals. So That is an absolutely fair critique. And I do think that that is another perspective on this deadline about where the Rangers missed. And I think in a lot of people's eyes, that probably would lower the grade. I know in this commenter's instance, he still thinks it's a solid B, but I think some people might see that and say, all right, well, they didn't fill their number one need, which was a goal scorer. So I'm going to give it a D or I'm going to give it a C, which would be totally fair.
So I want to talk about that for a bit with the need for the goal scorer. Is it they need a goal scorer or is it they need somebody to free up ice at 5-on-5 for Mika to be the goal scorer? Because Mika's a fucking goal scorer. He's just not fucking scoring.
Yes, that's a fair point. I mean,
I think, right. Yeah.
He scored 41 goals in 59 games. I know that's a few seasons ago now, but the guy, and what did he have last year? I think he had 38 or 39 goals, right? Almost 40.
I think. Yeah.
So, yeah, he's a high 30s, low 40s goal scorer in a usual year for him. He's absolutely having a down year. He would acknowledge it. We all know it. It's plain to see. He doesn't look like himself. The results are not what we all have come to expect. The underlying numbers are down. Everything's down across the board. And he has a big task ahead of him because it's not an easy thing to turn a season around when you're this deep into it. But that's what is required.
Well, you know, another thing too, if you really want to look at it, you don't want to become too top heavy. You know, the point of this deadline is essentially to do the opposite of what they did last year. And obviously we talked about Patrick Kane and essentially how that was forced upon the Rangers, you know, and then, you know, with the Tarasenko acquisition, you know, they were just too top heavy, you know, they had, you know, decent depth, but it just didn't fit right. So when you get a guy like Ross, like, yeah, don't get me wrong. And I'll say it again until the cows come home or whatever the saying is. I don't know. I'm not familiar with it. I guess that's correct, but you know, Gensel would have fit perfectly, but again, it was unlikely. And the next best thing was to just find depth and to get somebody or some player that can enable Mika. Because if you think about it, a lot of the issues that they're facing is that they're not generating enough room. And you know, Kaapo Kakko, God bless him, he's not very fast. You know, and that's, you know, I don't want to say it's no fault of his own. That's not the type of player he is. Mm-hmm. So what ends up happening is, yeah, they'll forecheck you like crazy, but they're not really generating much. So Rossovic seems like the guy that could complement them that, you know, on that perfect. So yeah, they may not have gotten like an Alex Tuch or, you know, even a Pavel Buchnevich, so to speak. But at the end of the day, they were able to find somebody that could potentially complement the needs that they can go for in terms of fitting that line. So it's not the flashy move, but ultimately it was, I think, the right move. So that's just me.
Yeah. No, I also think that, like, I mean, again, it's about Mika stepping up and finding the right guy to sort of, you know, ride shotgun with him and Kreider. You know, I don't know. I don't have anything else to say on that. What's the next question or comment?
All right. So, and at NYR Cup 2024 says a solid B. We have stars on the team. We just need them to play like stars. Now we did fill some holes in the lineup and are a better team overall than the beginning of the week. Would I like to have gotten a true right wing one? Sure. But this lineup gives us flexibility. Absolutely. 100%.
The flexibility is an important thing too, because, you know, Wennberg is a guy, the kind of guy that you're going to see out there in late game situations, protecting a lead. You know, maybe, you know, Roslovic does shift around the lineup. You probably will see a lot of Kakko on the top line, but I think you're right, JL. His game currently does seem to translate better to a third line type of role. And I'll tell you what, again, that cliche, but it can be very true about being hard to play against. I mean, a line that is made in a lab to be hard to play against is Cooley, Wennberg, and Kakko. Cooley's super heavy, physical, good skater. Wennberg is a defensive, you know, wizard with his stick and his ability to, you know, kill plays on entry and then transition the other way. Kakko's a beast of a forechecker. I mean, you have everything you need to spend long stretches of time in the other team's end to get out of your own end quickly and hopefully create some chances, you know, even if it's just bombs away from the point, right? Like, even if that line just becomes a very classic, like, We're going to cycle the puck. We're going to pass it back to the point and everybody crash the net and look for a rebound. That's how a lot of playoff goals are scored. And that line can play that style of hockey.
I concur 100%.
I got nothing else to add there.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So next question or next cost. Well, this is a question, actually. This comes from Anthony Caccioli at Caccioli 25. And he says, where do you see Rossovic slotting into the lineup? At third right wing with Cooley and Wenberg, or at run right wing with Kreider and Zibanejad?
Can I say both?
I'm going to say he's going to be with Zibanejad and Kreider. I think that just is what makes more sense to me. Unless they really think that Kako's going to break out with Kreider and Zip, I think Rossovic's going to get that top spot. Because it's a different look. I mean, we've had VC and Kako up there in different, you know, situations. So it wouldn't hurt to just kind of throw them together and see what it works. And I was reading something, and I hope I'm not getting on anybody's toes here. I was reading somewhere, and I might be, I don't know if I'm misinterpreting this stat or not, but this might have either been in our group chat, or this might have been on some other place. I haven't really done a good job at trying to remember where I get these things. It's not a good thing. But it said that he was playing a lot more wing with Columbus, yeah. And it seems like his production has gone up. So I think the Rangers are going to try and replicate that and stick him onto wing with those two guys. Because honestly, you're not trading for a guy that can play two positions just to have, you know, stick him in down the middle. You already got Wenberg for that, Trocheck and Zibanejad. So, you know, that's just me. So I think he's going to slot up with Mika and Kreider. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. The one thing that does not necessarily concern me, but it's something to note with Rossovic, and this is why I'm torn between where he's going to play, is he doesn't shoot much. His career high in shots on goal is 131. And what is that? One and a half, a little more than one and a half per game, roughly. Mm-hmm. So is his role in the top line going to be to, again, defer to Zibanejad, which has been the problem? Too many people are deferring to him, which is why, in all fairness, a lot of people want a Vetrano, because if you think about it, a volume shooter has to be respected, and it opens up ice for Zibanejad to shoot more. Vic doesn't have that shot that needs to be respected, or at least hasn't in a couple of seasons, I guess, but that's something I wanted to bring up, because he's not shooting, then how is he opening ice for Zibanejad? And I don't know enough about how Rossovic plays on offense and how he played. Like, I don't know his style. I don't watch him enough. I notice him on forechecks with Columbus. I notice him there, but I haven't really noticed him in the offensive zone.
No, that's a really good point, Dave. I mean, I think there's a difference between, and this, I say this without, similar to you, without, you know, certainly a lot of hours watching Jack Rossovic play hockey and really just reading some of the analysis and again, some of the analytics and micro stats as well. But there's a difference between, so I'm saying this more generally, right? There's a difference between deferring, and like being a playmaker, right? So like a playmaker might be someone who doesn't shoot a lot, but they are a great pass, like Matt Zuccarello, right? Like he is the epitome of a pass first player. We used to be able to say the same thing about Panarin, but he's shooting twice as much as he's ever shot in his career this year. Maybe bar his first year when he played with Patrick Kane and he was kind of the trigger man with him. But I don't think anybody would say that Matt Zuccarello is a guy that defers. I think they would say he's a playmaker, right? Yeah. Yes. He looks to pass first, but he is looking to make a killer pass that leads to a high danger scoring opportunity. Right. Whereas I think with Kako, for instance, or some of the other players that quote unquote defer, they're really just like, all right, I'm going to win my puck battle and maybe I'll hang on to it, but then I'm just going to dump the puck off to Zibanejad and let him figure it out. Right. They're not looking to put him in positions to succeed. Look, what I've read about Rossovic, again, without having watched him too much, is that he is more of a playmaker type, that he does know how to set his teammates up for good quality shots, get them the puck in shooting position. Because that's the other thing with Mika, to me, this year, it's just like you know, part of it is a function of not being in the offensive zone enough, but he's not finding himself in those prime shooting spots often at all this season, you know, and there's times when he tries to get himself there, you know, with the puck, you know, obviously he goes to his spots on the power play and the one timer's kind of been hot and cold this year, but you know, at 5-on-5, especially, he's just not, I mean, if you look at the way he scored some of his goals last year, you know, the 5-goal game is a great example as well from a few years ago against Washington. You know, he's the kind of guy who gets to the high slot and like will get a deflection, you know, kind of one of those long range deflection goals. He'll get the puck coming down, you know, downhill off of a pass and make a move to the backhand and score. He's got that move he likes to make off the rush where he fakes the slap shot and slips it through the goalie's legs, right? Like, so he gets, when he gets the puck in those prime areas, he's an elite finisher. That's what makes him one of the best centers in the league. He's mm-hmm. not getting those types of opportunities this year. And I think the hope is that Roslovic can put him in those spots a little bit more often.
That's a good point. So trivia though, because you brought up Zuccarello, what do you think was his high of shots on goal while he was with the Rangers?
Ooh.
Oh.
You said Roslovic was in 130 something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
No, I'm going to say Zouk as a Ranger, 148 shots on goal.
JL?
I'm going to say 156.
His low was 154.
Wow.
His high was 189.
Hmm.
He shot a hell of a lot more than people think.
Yep.
I was shocked by that, actually. That's why I mentioned it. Like, holy shit. After he traded to Dallas, by the way, he had 5 shots on goal in 2 games. I forgot what happened there, but I just thought that was funny.
Now that you bring that up, though, since we're talking about that, you know, Roslovic's career high for shots on goal in an 81-game season, 131. So that's not a lot.
131.
Yeah.
He shoots he gets 1.5 shots on goal per game. So obviously shooting is not his style. But like you said, and that was a very good point. If he's not shooting, how is he creating open ice for Zibanejad? And there's a difference between playmaking and deferring. That's a very good point. We'll have to see. We got to see how that looks.
All right. So this next one comes from DZ at SmoothRider40. They write, this feels similar to 2022. Were Kopp, Vetrano, and Mott big names then? I feel like they were names under the radar nobody expected to pick up.
Vetrano, definitely. I think Kopp was rumored for a while, wasn't he?
I actually don't recall, actually.
People were on Kopp. I mean, Nick always likes to toot his own horn, rightfully. He wanted Kopp for, you know, that whole deadline, pre-deadline period, and got his guy. I mean, that was a really good fit. That was another similar thing where Kopp was a center, but he was obviously brought in really to be the winger with Panarin and Strome. I do agree, though, in the overall sense that this is much more of a 2022-like approach to the deadline, where you're looking for multiple pieces to play roles as opposed to one or two big star ads. So, and generally speaking, those are more successful. That's usually the more successful strategy. You know, I'm trying to think, like, who was Vegas's big deadline addition last year? Obviously, look, I know they always go into LTIR and blah, 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 but like, did they add anyone huge? Like, I don't think they did. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just not remembering something.
Well, they added Eichel.
That wasn't at the deadline.
No, it wasn't at the deadline, but they did add Jack Eichel. So that,
yes.
Didn't he come of back course. Like in January though? Was that for the cup run? I might be getting years messed up here.
Yeah. I don't know.
You might be right. It's tough because kind of the gears just kind of blend together after a bit.
They do.
Especially when it comes to Vegas.
He only he played 44 games last year. So he did come back, I think, late in the year. I think that's correct. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's this year he's played 44 games. He played 67 games in 22.
So that wasn't the last year. Okay.
No, the first year he played 34 games in 21-22 with them.
Yeah, and my short-term memory has basically been replaced by Sesame Street songs at this point. so I have no idea. at all. Yeah. But well, fuck game. Vegas. Yeah. They got to put a new rule in where, like, you can't go more than X percent over the salary cap ceiling from long-term injured reserve in the playoffs. Something they have $14.5 million on long-term injured reserve right now, and all of them are coming back for the playoffs. Hurdle,
yep.
Martinez,
Eichel,
Stone's back.
Stone.
Stone. Yeah, Stone. Yeah.
Stone, Hurdle, they got to put Hurdle on LTIR, I think. Martinez, Eichel's back already. It's just fucking right. Absurd.
Yeah. Well, Stone has a lacerated spleen, which, you know, that sounds pretty serious. And they did say that they don't know. It's impossible to know the timetable until that's fully healed, because that's a pretty dangerous thing. You're not going to think Sean Avery had the same injury, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying these guys aren't hurt. Saying there has to be some kind of clause put in, certain percentage of the salary cap ceiling, you can't go over it in your lineup.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Well, and I know
something.
And I was just going to say, it's not like for like, because the salary cap system is completely different. But I know in the NBA, for instance, and they have a soft cap anyway, but with all sorts of weird, you know, clauses and machinations where you can go over, or you're into the tax, or you're not in the tax, whatever it is. But in the NBA, you actually have to apply for an exception with the league to go over the cap in the case of a long-term injury. So like the Knicks actually had to do that this year with Mitchell Robinson. And basically what the NBA does is they have an independent doctor evaluate the player. And in this instance, they actually said to the Knicks, they're like, well, hey, look, if he rehabs this injury, like he can actually come back before the season ends. So that's what the NHL could and should do, right? Is basically say, this is going to be, if you want to go into LTIR, maybe they give you like one slot, right? Every team gets one slot of LTIR money, and you could use that one slot. But if you have more than one guy going on LTIR, then it needs to be applied. It's a case by case basis, right? You need to apply for it, and the league can reject it pending the results of a doctor, right? Because if a doctor says, especially because of the way that the cap disappears in the playoffs, if a doctor says this player's reasonable return date is before the playoffs, you should not be able to use that LTIR money. That to me is the solution. And that doesn't infringe upon CBA or players. I don't think the players union have a problem with that. And I think, you know, the rest of the owners would certainly feel a little bit better about, you know, the lack of shenanigans that teams like Vegas and previously Tampa would pull.
And this is 1,000% sour grapes, because I really wish Drury would have done this with Lindgren last year, Lindgren this year, Lindgren the year before,
Trouba
basically Lindgren, Trouba this year. Like, I would have loved Drury if he did this, because it's a loophole and you can't fault Vegas or Tampa for using it. Kudos to them. I hate it because it's not my team doing it. I want to be very, it is 1,000% sour grapes.
Yeah. And we can still hate Vegas and root against them. That's what makes this fun.
Yeah, basically. They were fun for a while, but then their Twitter admin kind of got sickening very quickly.
So outside of our general distaste for Vegas, just going back to the question, who exactly, I'm having trouble remembering, so to speak, who exactly did we anticipate was going to be a Ranger, you know, at some point before they traded for Kopp, Vetrano, and Mott? I'm trying to remember who was who exactly, or who exactly we were, you know, kind of thinking of. Because I know there were a couple names out there that probably circled around after the fact, but I'm just trying to think who, you know, because the team was a bit different back then. You know, you had Strom was still on the roster, so I think they were looking for, you know, defensemen primarily to bolster the back end. But I'm trying to recall who exactly they were trying to go after, what was rumored, you know?
I don't remember. I mean, it's a great point.
If you give me enough time, I can scroll through the irresponsible rumor mongering category. Oh, wait, no.
Why don't you do that?
A year. Wow. Hold on. What year was that? 2022?
2021, 22.
Yeah.
So it would have been like 22, the trade deadline.
February, March, 22. Yeah.
Because I just remember, you know, it's going back to Smooth Writer's question. you know, Cop, Vetrano, and Mott, they were completely out of left field. I mean, more Vetrano and Mott than Cop, as you guys mentioned. But I just remember that the focus was on somebody else or other players. And that's
Ben
why
Chirot. It was such a... Ben Chirot was one.
Oh, jeez.
Targeting Vegas trade chips. No, there were no rumors. Philip Forsberg was never real. Okay, so Victor Olofsson. I have to go to March now. Okay, Vetrano. Wow, Vetrano wasn't acquired until March. Okay, so
the deadline was late. Yeah,
Ricard Raquel.
Okay, Raquel. That's one. There we go. Mm-hmm. That was the one I was thinking of.
That's who I wanted. That's who I wanted.
Yeah, me too.
Which, Arturi Lekkinen.
Yep, ooh, that's another one. Yep, that's right.
Would have been a good get too. Yes. Won the Stanley Cup.
Yes. Claude Giroux turned down a trade to the Rangers. They had a trade worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Giordano.
Yeah. Okay.
Although that
Justin
was
wrong with mine.
Yep. Alex Radulov.
Oh, I remember that one. Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah.
Oh God. Patrick Kane was a rumor that year.
Yes, he was. That started coming up. Larry Brooks actually wrote a column that year, basically saying, this seems like it's going to happen, so why not just do it now so you have him for two playoff runs, which probably a good thing they didn't do it because he hadn't had the surgery yet. He has recovered really well from the surgery, it needs to be said. He's played great this year.
Phil Kessel.
Oh, yes. Always. I see. Now that you mention it, Kessel was one for sure because I kind of wanted him. I was getting on people's cases about that, and people were getting on my case for getting on their case for wanting Phil Kessel, you know? I totally forgot about him, though. That's a pretty good point. Okay. Yeah. So you want to basically say that Rossovic is essentially like those guys, like the ones that we didn't expect. So,
yep.
Hold on. I'm curious. I want to check last year. Hold on. February of last year. I had no idea that the new layout on the site had this ability to search categories by year and month. It's my own fucking site. I had no idea. None. Obviously Kane was all goddamn year. So Mars
Tarasenko was pretty much out of left field, if I remember correctly, too. That people didn't see that
coming. Tarasenko was January.
Right.
So Timo Meier.
Timo Meier. I recall that one very well.
Meier was their apparent target, and then they got Tarasenko. That did come out of left field. Kravtsov requested trade. Timo Meier, top target. We were looking at Tyler Mott again. Patrick Kane again. More Patrick Kane. More Patrick. Jesus Christ. I wrote way too much on that fucking guy.
You and about a million other people.
Oh, Christ. Patrick Kane again. Keandre Miller's injury. Ryan Lingard's injury. Complicated shit. Jake Lecision. Kravtsov requested trade. Potential
four-speed
targets, Nola Chari, Nick Bjugstad, Sam Lafferty, all those guys.
Yeah, Bjugstad, Lafferty. And really, I think that's something that we all, in our post-mortem of the season, I think we kind of agreed on. Like, they probably would have been better off not taking on the whole Patrick Kane saga and shortening the roster to do it and all that. And probably they should have just gotten a 4C. Just spend a couple of assets, you know, because they wouldn't have had a lot of cap space, but get the money retained and bring in Bjugstad, who they would still have, right? Because and then you wouldn't have to worry about getting Nick Bonino. So that you know that actually might be a little bit bigger. I think last year's deadline is, you know, we're kind of all just chalking it up to like, well, they went out and got the stars and it didn't work, but like strategically, it might not have been the smartest, right? I mean, I think it's pretty easy, and we'll see how this year turns out. But I think it's easy to see that the 22 deadline was a complete home run. That was an awesome job by Chris Drury. I think last year might be a little bit worse than we're remembering it because, again, if you go out and get Nick Bjugstad, you've got a really good 4C, maybe even a 3C in a year like this where Filip Hedl gets hurt, who can put up 40 points. And like, you don't have to worry about Nick Bonino faking it for 3 months and then playing himself into retirement. So, I mean, Bjugstad seems like an opportunity miss now if he really was available.
Yeah. And he never got traded, right? He's been with Arizona.
Correct. He didn't get traded today either, did he?
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't. So maybe we're just pulling shit out of our asses at this point. That's because true. He's true. Around every trade deadline and nobody ever says, oh, he got traded. No, he never gets traded.
Which is maybe strange.
Maybe he likes playing in the college town. I don't know.
But it's so weird when it comes to Bukestad because he's such an effective player. You would think that a player like him would be in demand more.
No doubt. He's like the archetype that gets traded at the deadline all the time. He's like the made in a lab to be traded to a contender every spring.
Exactly. And he would have done Keith wonders. Kachuk.
Basically, yeah. Late stage Keith Kachuk. Yeah,
slightly less skills. So, okay. Interesting.
All right. A couple more.
All right. We've got, at least on the post that I'm looking at, we have two more. One of them's really quick. This one's from Eben Fenton. At Eben Fenton just writes B.
Nice.
I agree. And then this next one comes from AJH 44444. And they write, I give it a B. They filled their needs, didn't give up much. Two realities. If Panarin, Zib, Fox, and Igor don't play like superstars, we aren't going far. Agree 100%. Two, of all the teams that made the big swings, at the best, one of them will win the cup. But there's a chance none do. It's actually a good point, too.
It's a great way to look at it. It's a great way to look at it.
I missed that.
Say that again, JL.
Which one?
Yeah, again, I missed it.
The last part of that.
The last part is two realities, and then the first one was basically superstars, where if they don't perform, we're not going far. Two, of all the teams that made big swings, at best, one of them will win the cup, but there's a chance none do. And I said that's an interesting point because that is essentially what happened to the New York Rangers last year, if you think about it.
Yep.
I like that.
So. Well, and that's actually a great segue, too, if we have no more comments.
I have one on my quote tweet. Okay. Sorry. Robbie, live, laugh, love. Alexi, Bustin here. Oh, no, Bustin. Yeah. I don't know how to pronounce that. It's not Bustin here. I can show you that, but I mispronounced it, but it's close enough to it. Who do you think gets the right wing one spot? 96 or 24. That's Roslovic or Kako. I think we covered that already. I just want to call out the fact that Roslovic is wearing Charlie Conway's number.
Yes. Love that. Good vibes. I was going to say is, yeah. And I think we kind of landed on, give Roslovic some run there and see how it works out.
Yeah.
Just a very quick segue and let's do a quick, just a 2-minute wrap up here on maybe one top line thought from the trade deadline at large. Right. So, and here's mine. I have a hot take. I'm going to be playfully, but also playfully critical, but maybe not so much because I don't like them at all of the Carolina Hurricanes who, yes, they landed Jake Guentzel. Congratulations. Great job. You got your guy. You also traded for Evgeny Kuznetsov. And they seem to feel like they can integrate him into their system. There were multiple reports that they envision a top six role for him.
Oh.
And so they are remaking their team here. They are doing, dare I say, something very similar to what the Rangers did last year with Kane and Tarasenko, right? So they bring in one bona fide goal scorer who has a good playoff track record. They bring in another guy who was a former star player, mostly a playmaker, whose metrics are in the tank and has been a net negative player for years with the idea that he can, find the fountain of youth and be a better player out of nowhere, even though there's really no evidence to suggest that that's possible. I have a very strong feeling that the Carolina Hurricanes will regret this trade deadline. And look, maybe I'll be regretting these comments and they're going to win the cup and I'm going to look like an idiot. But those moves just don't seem to fit with the Guentzel one does. Sure. I mean, whatever. He's a great goal scorer. He fits with anybody. That's not like a genius move by Don Waddell. And I'm sure Guentzel can play Rod Brind'Amour style. But then going to get Kuznetsov and just what you can see they're trying to do is basically double down on like, hey, we need the game breaker now. Like we have the hard workers, we have the volume approach and the whole Carolina, Corsi Hurricanes way of playing and all that stuff, a million shot attempts. We need more game breaking players who can score and make plays out of nothing. Fine. They are sacrificing a lot of defense with Kuznetsov on the ice. Gensel is a bad defensive player too. His goal scoring probably outweighs the defense, the defensive liabilities, but they still are liabilities. I just think that if there's one team that took a big swing that could fail miraculously or miserably, it's going to be Carolina. So that's my one final deadline thought from outside of the Rangers.
I don't want to say anything about teams that are in the playoffs because I don't want to jinx it, but I will say the teams that win the deadline rarely win the cup. Rangers won the deadline last year. We saw how that worked out. The Devils won the offseason this year. They're not making the playoffs. How many times do we see paper GMs or Monday morning quarterbacks, whatever the term you want to use is, armchair GM saying, oh, this team won the deadline. This team won the offseason. They're the favorites to win the cup, and then they go and shit the bed. We don't know how this is going to turn out, especially in hockey, because, and I'm going to beat this fucking horse to death, systems and coaches matter. And we don't know how these guys integrate. We don't even know how the guys the Rangers got are going to integrate into the system. We don't know until the games are played, until they have time to adjust. Hockey, unlike any other sport, needs the time to adjust. We don't know what that's going to look like.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a great point. And yeah, I mean, and I think you, like you said about the Rangers, you know, they seem to have added good fits, low maintenance guys, but at the same time, you just don't know. And that's Peter Laviolette's job now. All right, JL, what's your kind of final deadline thought before we wrap up?
So on the Rangers, they definitely did get better. Rostovic, while not a flashy name, it looks like it might be what this team needs. You're basically looking at trying to improve the Kreider-Zibanejad line. I think Rossovic is the perfect fit for that. You know, you guys already said it. They won the deadline last year and it didn't work out for them. I think the stat is there's only been four teams since I think the salary cap era that have, I saw this on Twitter, credit to Stat Boy Steven for putting this out there. If I'm correct, there have only been four teams that have gone big at the deadline and won the Stanley Cup. It was Tampa Bay, Carolina, Boston, and there's one team that I'm missing out completely. But, you know,
probably the Kings. The 12 Kings added Jeff Carter and Mike Richards, right? Was that at the deadline?
Oh, my God.
No, that was early in the season. That was early in the season.
But, okay. No, they added one early in the season. They added the second at the deadline, right? Or
no.
No, it was
Carter was brought in for Jack Johnson not too long into Carter's first season with Columbus. So it wasn't at the deadline. But
right.
But the point I'm trying to make, though, obviously, is that the Rangers did a good job. They added depth. That's what they need. You said it perfectly, Dave, on Twitter, that they're looking for balance. And I think that's what they did. You know, it's not a flashy name, but to the people who I've seen basically lament, you know, the end of the season and, you know, inevitable elimination, don't worry. Let them figure it out. They should be good. Now, outside of the NHL, outside of the Rangers, excuse me. I agree with you, Rob. The Carolina Hurricanes are a bunch of frauds, and they weren't good enough as is now with their paper thin defense. You know,
I swear to fucking God, guys. I swear to God.
He thinks we're jinxing. I don't believe in that stuff anymore. God.
Yeah.
But,
you know, their defense is paper thin. I'm not really a big fan of their defense. And now we're going to try and resurrect the corpse of Evgeny Kuznetsov. Jake Gensel, great. Congratulations, like you said. But, you know, unless they just decide to go on this complete 180. I think, as the kids like to say, I think they're cooked. So
we shall see. Dave, is this because you talked a bunch of shit about the Devils last year and then they beat the Rangers in the playoffs? Is that where this comes from? Because you were not previously like a don't jinx it guy.
No, this is honestly coming from work. I just have had the worst fucking luck at work. I've been on a 5-year project and I keep saying we're due for a break, we're due for a break, and the break never fucking comes. So I think this has crept into the rest of my life at this point, because I'm just hearing this and I'm just like, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up. But it could be just an occupational hazard that I'm sitting here, I'm like twitching hearing this. Also, you know that Sam, you know, likes both the Rangers and the Canes. And I think it's more the Canes now because of just how some of the how the Rangers have handled certain events and acquisitions in the last couple of years. I don't want to hear it from her. All right.
Fair.
No, I don't want to fucking hear it from her.
So, yeah, listen, I know we have a Canes fan in our ranks. No, listen, it's I just think that. Again, I just there are interesting parallels to me of Tarasenko and Kane to the Rangers last year and Gensel and Kuznetsov to the Canes this year, where I just don't think it may not be the slam dunk that a lot of people think it is. I think what Florida did, hard to argue with. I mean, I don't think Kyle Okposo as much, but obviously Tarasenko can still play. You know, and Florida certainly seems like the toughest out, right? That's a team that you know, I think is going to be a problem no matter how you slice it. Boston had a really bad deadline. The Islanders didn't do anything for, I think I just saw this on Twitter, the fourth straight year, Lou Lamoriello made zero trades at the deadline. Like, man, I mean, you think we have it rough as Ranger fans. Like, what are they doing in Elmont, New York right now?
Oh, jeez.
What are they doing?
That's another podcast for another day.
It is. Yeah, no, I know. We don't have the time. All right, guys, this was fun. Folks, I hope you've enjoyed it. You know, we're putting it out on Saturday, not a huge podcast day, but we want to get it out. And we'll be back with sort of regularly scheduled programming next week. Obviously we'll have a few, games under our belt with the new guys in the lineup, and we'll see how that's all integrating. Dave, JL, any final thoughts before we sign off?
LGR.
Let's go.
Yeah. Put up or shut up now.
Yep.
Totally agree. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Live from the Blue Seats. We'll see you next week.